Welcome to SaaS Open Mic by Chart Mogul. I'm Annie Musgrove. The tech scene in Paris is going from strength to strength. Each year, we see more big-name businesses growing up with their roots in the French capital, and organizations like The Family and eFounders are working to promote that growth. On June 1st, the city will host the third edition of B2B Rocks, a conference aimed at founders of enterprise SaaS software businesses and investors. Ed spoke to the founder of the conference, Alex Delevet, to find out exactly how his vision for a SaaS conference in Paris drove him to become the single organizer of such a well-renowned event. That's right, he's the only full-time person working on organizing this conference. Alex also talks about lessons learned as a first-time founder of the failed travel startup TripXP and how he's pushing to move the French startup scene forward. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes or SoundCloud to avoid missing out on the next episode. But for now, enjoy Ed talking to Alex Delevet.
Alex, I think it might be best if we start by having you describe what you do. I had a look at your background and you've been involved in so many different things.
Hi, thanks. So, basically, I will describe myself as an entrepreneur, and I've got several hats. So the first one, as you told, is I'm the organizer of B2B Rocks. So B2B Rocks is a conference for B2B and SaaS founders, and also for VCs. So this year, it's the third edition. My second hat is I'm working on a new project, a new SaaS. It's a SaaS for VCs. Actually, it's a deal flow manager for VCs. It's not yet ready, so I didn't communicate on that already. But lots of VCs already know that I'm working on it. And the third hat is I'm running Startup Digest in Paris. Mm-hmm. And Startup Digest is a newsletter for entrepreneurs to know every week all the events that happen in your city. That's all.
Cool. Yeah, it's you definitely seem to be involved in a lot of things. I'm not sure how you find enough time to do all of that, especially with the conference, which I know conferences take so much effort to organize. So obviously you're pretty much specialized in the SaaS, B2B SaaS space. Yeah. That's one common thing amongst all of those. How did you get into that space in the beginning?
Well, if you want my full background, well, I will try not to be too long.
Okay.
But I started, being interested by the web very, very early, like in my early 20s. Mm. And at the time, I was a self-loan developer, and I ran a web agency while I was studying in a business school in Paris. Mm. It's not totally related, but at the end of my scholarship, I decided to go in a big corporate group. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, at the time it was what you were supposed to do if you want to make a good career. Mm. And so, I spent 5 years in this company with interesting position, like I was doing merger and acquisition. Then I was the assistant of one of the CEO of the group. And then I was leading the financial planning team of one of the subsidiary. Mm. And at this time, I was working a lot and I did a small burnout. And then I stepped back and I was, okay, what I really want to do in 5 years. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to came to the startup world. So I didn't know exactly what to do because I needed to learn more on startups. Mm. And so then I created a first startup called TripXP. And so TripXP, it was a website to discover and book local activities offered by local people. And well, I launched it with two friends, and we ran it for 2 years, but it was not successful at all. So we decided to shut it down. And at this time, I was also I was really involved in the startup ecosystem. I was okay. In fact, I'm not really interested by consumer products. I think consumer products are very, very hard to launch. I really prefer B2B startups.
So what was the thing that drove you to create TripXP? Obviously, as a travel product, was that like an area that you were interested in, or
not really? In fact, one of my best friends once, I had a lunch with him, and then he told me, okay, I've got this idea. I think it could be interesting. There's nearly nobody in this field at the time. And, it was in 2011. And so it was really the beginning of Airbnb and Uber and all this on-demand thing. And so it was like, okay, we should do something. There is a huge trend and so on. And I think it was true. But what we didn't expect it, and we didn't figure out before, it was about the model. Because, selling activities give you a very, very short cut on every activity. And you need to sell like a lot of activities. There's nearly no repeats. So, the model is nearly impossible.
Okay.
So even if it could look like looks like a good opportunity on the paper, if you try to do the math, it's not. So
right.
We should have figured it out before.
Were there other companies that succeeded with that model, or was it just a bad model basically from the beginning?
I think the two main competitors at this time were Viable in the US and Gidzi in Europe, in Berlin. And Viable, I don't know exactly how they're going. I'm not sure that that's successful right now. And Gidzi, they raised money with Index. And then a few months later, or maybe 1 year later, they've been acquired by Get Your Guide.
Okay, yeah.
I don't know exactly the deal, but I'm pretty sure that they bought the team, and there was a good fit with between Get Your Guide and Gidzi, but the product is not the same at all. So
okay. What were kind of the most important things that you learned from TripXP? Obviously, the company didn't succeed, but I'm guessing you came away much more educated in the startup.
I think we made all the mistakes with my friends. No, really. But I'm pretty happy to make them.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. If it's going to fail, you should probably try to make all the mistakes, right? And then you know them.
we did it. The first one is I launched this company with two very good friends, and I'm not sure it's a good idea to launch a company with your friend, because sometimes it can break your friendship.
Yeah.
And it did not for us, but it could have been. The second one is they were not full time, and I was, and I think if you are trying to learn something all together, everybody needs to be full time. The third one is we didn't have a complementary team, we were like all these guys. No tech people. Even if I coded in the past and I'm coding again now, I decided not to code this this product. So we ordered the website to a web agency, and it was a huge mistake. Well, and just to well to clarify, so we raised a very, very short money with business angels, and so we had, when we decided to close, we were like, okay, maybe we can do a pivot, and we were like, okay, maybe we should offer a SaaS for activities providers, so they can manage all their activities and put them on a website like ours, because there's a lot now. And we are like, okay, but if you want to sell SaaS, then you need to have a technical team.
Yeah.
You can't rely on an agency. And we were like, okay, but we don't have any technical skills with the team. So, and that's why we didn't pivot. So, I mean, it was a very, very huge mistake. And I think also it was a key learning from my experience after at eFounders. When I worked at eFounders, we had a very, very good, well, they have very good skills in tech, and the products are always evolving, and I think if you want to have a great startup, you need to be always improving your product, always changing things on the product. So
makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you walked away from ChipXP, obviously with all of these insights, and then you mentioned eFounders.
Yeah.
That was the next thing after ChipXP, I'm guessing. And
yeah,
what did you actually do there with eFounders?
Well, at eFounders, it's hard to. Well, I don't know exactly. no, really. I worked on very different things there. I started. We were like five or six in the team, and when I left, we were like 15. So I think I spent like 1 year and a half there, and I did a lot of hiring, like a lot, but for our own team, but also to find new CEOs for the projects. And also I worked to explore new business opportunities for the next products.
Okay.
So it was very interesting because I could jump on different project like five times in a day. So it was really, really interesting to explore opportunities and then to go back to another one and so on.
So the way, if I understand it correctly, the way that eFounders operates is that they basically hire entrepreneurs, right?
Yeah. I think... at eFounders, they've got the idea. Then they find two entrepreneurs to build the idea with.
Okay.
One technical founder and one biz founder. And also, I think eFounders could be really considered as a co-founder, because it brings lots of other people that would be involved in the project.
Yeah.
So, like, design team, product team, lots of other skills. So, and they all work together, like the two founders plus the eFounders team. And then, the goal is to have a product, a nice product, and then to launch it, and then to make it growth. And when it's big enough to raise money, they raise money, and then each project tries to hire all the skills that are at eFounders to have its own team.
Okay, okay. There's obviously a number of fairly recognized businesses that have come out of eFounders now, and it's an interesting model. On a wider scale, there's seems to me like there's a lot happening in Paris right now. perhaps there are a lot of outsiders that don't really have a good grasp on the ecosystem in Paris. Could you kind of describe a little bit what's going on there?
The ecosystem changed a lot, but I think it's not only in Paris, it's all over Europe, or also in the Valley. So it's not special to Paris.
Mm.
But we've got, well, quite big startups, even few unicorns. So then we've got lots of VCs, we've got lots of, lots of people working there. I think one of the major change is about the kind of people that work in startup. Because like 5 years ago, people, well, in business school, for example, didn't want to work in startup when at the end of the scholarship, they wanted to go in finance or in a consulting firm. But now we've got more people that want to work in startups. We also have more people that already have experience in startups. And I think that's really important, like in sales, in product management, in design and so on. So it's more professional than it used to be.
Yeah, yeah. Would you recommend to a potential founder that's considering European cities, do you think Paris is a good place to come for an outsider?
Really, I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm not sure, and I will try to explain you why. I think there's several reasons. Well, the first one is because of France. Unfortunately, France is not very, very welcoming. Maybe you have seen, but for example, unions right now are pretty aggressive.
Mm.
And I think it's not a good signal for foreign companies to come in Paris.
Sure, yeah.
And the second one is because of the multicultural
so, it's a big word.
well, I mean, if you're going in Berlin or in London, for example, you will meet a lot of foreign entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
But if you come in Paris, you will nearly see only French entrepreneurs.
Okay.
So it's a kind of chicken and egg issue. But right now it's not so diversified.
Okay.
I know that the French tech, maybe you've heard of it, is trying to add that to try to solve this problem.
Mm.
But well, it will take a long time. When good signal is, I think like 3 or 4 years ago, every event in Paris were in French.
Mm-hmm.
And now lots of events are in English. So we are more international for foreign people, but it's not enough.
Yeah, I guess, you know, when it's a cultural change that's required, or at least there are bigger things causing it, it takes much longer to change that kind of thing.
Yeah. For example, when I started Startup Digest in 2011, it was in French. Mm-hmm. And then in 2013 or 14, I don't remember, I switched it in English because I wanted to be able to, to have foreign people that could be... could read this digest and to go to events in English.
Mm.
And I've got emails from French people asking me, why are you doing this email in English?
Okay. So, that's interesting.
It still take time.
Obviously, you seem to be doing a great job at putting Paris on the map as well through the B2B Rocks conference, which you mentioned is on its third iteration now. Mm-hmm. And I guess you're pretty much in the last preparation stage for that, which is it the 1st of June?
Yeah, it's the 1st of June, so in 1 week.
Yeah, so I've heard from so many people that conferences are some of the hardest things to crack as a especially, you know, one that's in kind of the early iteration or stages. Why did you decide to create B2B Rocks?
Well, I started it in 2013. And at the time, I was blogging. And during the summer of 2012, I wrote a blog. Well, I've seen an event in the US called Unsexy. And Unsexy was about, well, unsexy startups. And I was like, okay, it's a good idea. And I wrote a blog post about that. And to conclude with this blog post, I was like, maybe we should launch this kind of events in France. And it was in August. So I was not expecting a lot from this article. And then a few days later, I was like, okay, it's very, very strange because, I've got a lot of views and lots of shares and lots of comments. And people were like, okay, you should do it. And I was like, okay, maybe I will consider it. And so I decided to do it. And the first one was, in March 2013 in Paris. And, well, I didn't take that much risk because it was in French. It was at Microsoft. So they gave me the room. All the catering and so on. So it was, well, not that hard to organize. The only thing that I have to do is to promote the event and to find the speakers. Mm. And because it was in French, it was only my direct network of French entrepreneurs. So it was okay. And then because it was successful, I decided to do one again the year after. But as I told you, I am, well, right now I'm like, okay, I hate French events in France, in French and so on. Mm-hmm. So I said, okay, I will do another one, but I will do it in English and with foreign speakers. So I've been introduced to great entrepreneurs like Destrenor, one of the co-founder of Intercom, or Nikos Moraitakis, one of the founders of Workable, and also to Christoph Jans. And they came for the event, and also people that were like crazy about the event. They thought it was very, very interesting, and that's it. And so, because people thought it was interesting, I decided to do one again. Mm. And last year I didn't organize one because I was working at eFounders at the time, and we were lacking of resources.
Sure.
To organize this kind of event. We thought about it, but we were like, okay, in fact, it's not our business to organize events. So we need to focus on what we should do. And so we decided not to do another one. And when I decided to leave eFounders, I was like, okay, I will organize a new B2B Rocks.
Yeah. I'm guessing you had a lot of people crying out last year for you to do it again, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think it's interesting, like just the fact that you were able to put together something and attract these kind of speakers probably proves that there's a very big kind of latent demand for this kind of thing in Europe. I don't think there's a huge amount of really quality SaaS focused events out there. Is there anything specific you're doing with the format of it, or what's your kind of vision for how the conference is put together?
To put together a conference, you need, I think you need four components. The first one is production. So you need to have a great venue, great suppliers, catering, and so on. Mm-hmm. Then you need to have a good lineup. And I think more importantly than the lineup, you need to find the right topic for each speakers. And so I try to spend time time with the speakers, trying to understand where do they come from, what their background, what their experience that they can share, and then to find the right topic and I can put them on. So it's a lot of work about that. And then well, the two other components are you need to find great sponsors, otherwise you won't have enough budget for the conference. And the final one is the audience. And I have to admit that this year it was pretty tough because I decided to change a little bit how it will work for the audience. I wanted to have an founders only event.
Okay.
Well, founders, VPs, and VCs to be correct. Why? Because I'm not sure if you are a founder and if you are spending one day in a conference, you need to, well, it needs to be very, very valuable for you.
Yeah.
And if all the people that you met at the conference are like, potential suppliers for you, Headhunter, fundraiser, all these kind of people, or consultant.
Yeah,
it won't be that nice for you. But you want to meet. I think as a founder, you want to meet your peers because you can learn from them, or you can do some partnership with them, and you want to meet some potential investors. So basically, that's the people I want together.
Okay, so you're actually applying a hard kind of filter to people that can attend this year.
Yeah.
Has that? Yeah. I guess that's made it much harder for you to sell tickets.
Yeah, that's true. But it's very, very hard to find the right way to do that. That's it.
Do you have a... I'm guessing you're not doing all of this on your own. You have people helping you. What kind of people do you need if you want to put on a conference like this?
Well, I'm doing this conference nearly on my own. I've got a virtual assistant.
Okay.
She's working away from here remotely, like 2 or 3 hours a day, and she helps me. Sending emails, preparing stuff, and so on. So that's pretty cool. And during the event, I hire some freelance to help me. But that's
okay.
It.
Oh wow! So in terms of like full time people, it's really just you.
Yeah.
Wow.
Exactly. But you know when you're alone, everything is in your head, and you don't have all this friction. Because of co-organizing coordinating stuff, so you gain a lot of time.
Yeah,
and it's not official, but nearly. we will probably launch B2B Rocks abroad this year. Not in Europe, but in another continent.
Interesting.
I tried to tease you.
Wow, is this an exclusive that you're?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
and for that, I'm working to other people there because I can't organize the event far away. So they are doing all the local stuff, and I'm trying to give them the networks, advice, and how to organize the events and so on.
Yeah. And I guess because it really is just you, the vision and the, you know, everything is really just an extension of your personal vision for the conference.
I think so. Yeah.
It really does reflect like your exact. Vision for how things should work. That's really interesting. I'm interested to hear about your virtual assistant experience, because just personally, I've looked at that in the past. Yeah. But maybe we should discuss that another time.
With pleasure.
Yeah. So I don't want to keep you too much longer. Obviously, you got a lot of stuff to do, but there's a lot of conferences out there. I know perhaps in this specific niche, there's not so much in Europe, but how would you define or the difference between a successful, a good conference and perhaps some that are like less useful? If there are some mistakes that you would kind of could tell us about.
Sure. Well, I think the characteristic for a good conference are, well, for me, I think it's very personal, but the first one is to have great talks and with strong takeaways for the audience. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're a CEO and you spend one day in a conference, you need to learn something. If during one day you've got some very, very vague topics and vague talks and you won't learn anything, I think you're, spending your time incorrectly. Mm. And the second thing for a good conference is a good network. You need to meet in one day the good people. It doesn't mean you need to meet a lot of people, but you just need, well, for example, if I'm going to an event and I'm only meeting 3 or 5 great people that will be useful for me later, it's okay for me. I don't need to go back at the office with a ton of business cards. And I think this is a true component of a good conference. Mm. Conference organizer, maybe the mistake that you can make is to try to make a big event like with too many people. I think it's a wrong matrix for lots of people. You think, okay, I should for example, for the two first conference of B2B Rocks, I had like 250 people for the first one and 350 for the second one.
Okay.
And this year I decided to have only 200 people.
Oh, right. So you've shrunk the size.
Yeah. But I think 200 people were more interesting, is better for everybody. So you're not obliged to do a very, very big event. Mm-hmm. And for example, if you ask people what are the best events they've been to, few of them will tell you a very, very big event like the Web Summit. Web Summit is cool, but you won't meet anybody there.
So, yeah. So from you then, the bottom line is it's all about quality rather than scale.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I guess it's very difficult to scale a conference with maintaining the same quality. Yeah, makes sense. Cool.
So you need to find the right balance.
Yeah.
And also, it's very, very hard because if you make it too small, sponsors won't come to your event. Mm. And if you make it too big, interesting people won't come. So you need to find the good number.
Definitely a tough balance, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, Alex, it's been really great to chat to you. I guess I'll let you get back to your organization. Do you still have tickets for the event?
Nearly not. I'm nearly sold out.
Okay. Where can people go to find out more if they're interested?
Sorry?
Where can people go to buy the last few tickets?
I think that when you will publish this interview, we will be sold out.
So it's really, really nearly not. Okay.
Yeah, but the good news is that the B2B Rocks will be filmed, and all the talks would be released on YouTube. So
Okay.
Check it out on YouTube.
Great, awesome. Well, thanks so much, Alex. have a great conference. I hope it goes really well for you. Yeah. And thanks for taking the time to chat.
Thank you. Thank you.
Awesome. Ed.